This is the Man in Black, here to introduce this weekly half hour of suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you Mr. Orson Welles. Mr. Welles will appear as star of the suspense drama called The Dark Tower, from the play by George S. Kaufman and the late Alexander Wolcott. But before we raise the curtain on this evening's tale of suspense, here is a message from your host, the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
Let us picture a scene in the fashionable restaurant El Patio in Havana, Cuba. From the next table, we hear a Cuban judge of fine wines describe in glowing terms the wonderful climate and soil of our own California. When his American guest points out that his Cuban host has never been to the United States, the Cuban answers, "Well, it's true I've never visited your California, but from only such perfect wine country could come sherry of such superb quality as that we have enjoyed. Roma California Sherry." Yes, by their example, wine connoisseurs of many other lands tell you that in Roma wines are all the great qualities that must be present in a wine for great enjoyment. It's for this reason these wine experts of other lands import Roma wines from great distances to be enjoyed as a rare luxury. But for you, this luxury of other lands becomes a daily pleasure, because you can enjoy any of Roma wine's many different taste-appealing wine types without additional charge for import duties and expensive shipment from great distance. These two great Roma wine features, superb quality and small cost, have made Roma wines America's largest selling wines. I'll spell out the name for you. R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
And now with The Dark Tower, and with the performance of our star Orson Welles, as that noted actor Damon Wellington, scion of the celebrated royal family of stage and screen, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
I will prove to the world there are no brains within that thick, Teutonic skull. I'll cleave it open like an overripe melon. Who thus profanes the rehearsal of maligns? Enter, if thou art man of woman born. I fear thee not.
Hello, Damon.
Ben Weston, you old son of a gun. I heard you were back from the coast. What news on the Rialto from that cesspool of the arts known as Hollywood? Have they turned my picture to the wall at the Brown Derby yet?
No, it's still there.
I despise myself for wanting to know, of course. It's marvelous to have you back, Ben, old boy. Seen Jessica yet?
Yes, I've seen her.
Isn't she looking fine? Feeling better than she has for years, I think. You got a great thing in this play, Ben. Changed quite a bit from the original, of course, sort of a satire on the family. Perhaps it might be more dignified to say that the family is a satire on the play.
Yes, I heard about it.
For instance, those lines you heard me declaiming as you entered actually happened to me once, you know. That German, what's his name, who directed Macbeth, he called me a ham. And I chased him out of the theater, and for four city blocks, in full costume, with a two-edged sword.
Damon.
There's a little thing I like of the second act, too. Jessica asked me why I don't stop drinking, and I say, what? Would you have me subsist entirely on food and reach the gargantuan proportions of an Orson Welles? That ought to needle the boy wonder. Amen.
Damon, can't you stop clowning for a minute?
Of course I can. Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave.
Damon, please. Please be serious.
What's the matter, old man?
You know as well as I do what's the matter.
No, frankly, I can't say that I do. Only the world looks rather well.
Does it? And Jessica feeling better than she has for years, is she?
Well, isn't she?
Of course not. How could she be?
And why shouldn't she be?
Damon, don't you realize there's been a murder?
Well, to be sure, so there has. And a good thing, too, if you ask me. What of it?
What of it? Can't you see the thing is hanging over this house like a curse?
I hadn't noticed anything hanging over this house, profane or otherwise.
And what about Jessica?
Oh, I suppose it's bound to upset her a little, but she's really in fine shape, Ben. She's going to be marvelous in this play.
There's more at stake in this than a play, Damon. The thing has never been solved. Perhaps it never will be.
Perhaps that's just as well.
But Jessica can't remember, don't you understand, Damon? She can't remember.
Well, then, Jessica can't remember.
Listen to me, Damon. I wouldn't mind it if it was just that other people thought she might have done it. But they would do that anyway. But she does.
Ah, come on, Ben. I don't believe it.
I've talked to her, Damon. I know. Damon, I love Jessica more than anything else in the world. You know that.
Yes, Ben, I do.
But this way, I couldn't.
You couldn't marry a murderess, I just think it'd be rather exciting. Now that you mention it, I rather wish I had. Instead of some of those I did marry.
Damon.
I'm sorry. Pretty serious to you, isn't it, old man?
Did you think it wouldn't be?
Well, to tell you the truth, Ben, I hadn't thought about it at all. That's the trouble with being an actor. As long as your part's good, you don't give a hang about the rest of the play. Have you told Jessica?
Yes, we had a long talk.
How did she take it?
You know Jessica, she carried it off, of course.
Ben, you know, in spite of all our histrionic bickering, I'm rather nuts about Jessica myself.
I know you are, Damon.
I have no very fundamental objections to you, either. I would describe you, my dear Benjamin, as adequate.
Thanks.
So I think perhaps you and I'd better have a nice, long, heart-to-heart talk.
What good will talking do?
I think if you'll do the listening and let me do the talking, you'll see. Lend me your ears. I will a tale unfold. Jessica, as you know, had been in a sanitarium for nearly a year. She hadn't been on the stage in more than 2 years. The Dark Tower was to be her first attempt to work again. All that time. I know it isn't the greatest play in the world, but it has a surefire box office appeal. Jessica needed that to get her confidence back. Well, we were just polishing up a few last-minute changes here at the house. David Torrance, the producer, you know, he was there with us. And, of course, there are the usual little differences.
And another thing, Damon. When you kick me in the middle of the second act...
Where?
You know perfectly well where... Is it absolutely essential that you boot me halfway across the stage?
What do you want me to do, pull my punches? That's one of the high spots in the show.
It may be a high spot to you, darling, but it's just a black and blue spot to me.
Very well. Henceforth, I shall appear for the second act on crutches. You know, Uncle David, that's not a bad idea.
Oh, now, Damon, let's be serious. There's a lot of work to
do. I'm quite serious. I could throw them at her.
You might try throwing me a cue once in a while. The use of having a play if you just make up the lines as you go along.
The critics thought my ad-libbing very witty, remember, dear?
Oh, Damon, you're such an insufferable ham.
A ham? A ham? Me? A ham?
Now, children, please.
I fail to see why I should permit that little minx to insult me with impunity, David.
How dare you speak to me that way?
You started it.
I did not.
You started. You called me a ham.
You are ham, ham, ham.
Minx, minx, minx.
Stop that brawling.
But soft. What light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Martha is the sun.
I quite agree.
What?
That you're a ham.
Gad, I am beset by harpies.
David, haven't you any control over these hirelings of yours?
Oh, I'm only the producer, my dear Martha. You at least are a member of the family.
And you at least can quit.
We're terribly sorry, Aunt Martha. We've been a nuisance, I know, and I apologize. Damon... I even apologize to you.
Don't be silly, Jim.
I've been much the worst, I know, but I've really been terribly keyed up working again. And, you know, Ben is coming east for the opening.
Love rears its ugly head.
Don't be horrid, Damon.
It's all right. I couldn't even be angry if he was. Anyway, I'll have a husband to protect me by this time next week.
I can lick him with one hand tied behind me.
Damon, seriously... I know I owe you an awful lot.
Me?
I hadn't actually realized how far I'd gone. These last 6 months have been like coming alive again. The play and Ben. Thanks, Damon.
Good Lord.
Now I think I'll dress for dinner. Let's all go out to the... I'll get it. Aunt Martha, where would you like to go?
To a rest home.
Hello? Who? No. No, he's not here. He's not here, I tell you. He's dead.
Oh, darling, what is it?
It was for Stanley.
For Stanley?
Yeah.
Never mind, darling, it's all right. Just some fool who didn't know.
Of course. Damon, you take David and Martha after dinner, will you? I think I'll lie down for a little while.
Oh, come on, Jess. You mustn't let a little thing like that upset you.
I know, but I'm awfully tired. Please.
Jessica!
You'd better leave her alone for a while, Martha.
Oh, I suppose so.
It was for Stanley Vance, the husband, huh?
Yes.
He's dead, you say?
Might as well tell him about it, Martha.
I was always for telling about it.
Well, you don't have to.
I'd rather. He was the cause of her breakdown, of course.
Should have been an actor. That's why Jessica married him.
She married him because he forced her to marry him. He controlled that girl's mind like some sort of fiendish hypnotist.
My dear Martha, I've always said that if Jessica was fool enough to marry a psychoanalyst...
Damon, stop playing the heartless brother. You saw what Stanley did to her.
I was in Hollywood.
Perhaps that's why Damon went to Hollywood, eh?
Well, what could one do? She was legally married to the man. She'd listen to no one but him.
Here's what happened, David. She went to this fellow to be psychoanalyzed, and in the process, something happened. I don't know what it was, but Vance acquired a power over Jessica's mind that was utterly inhuman. He married her, quite frankly, to have her support him. Then he found he'd overplayed his hand and sent her into a complete mental collapse. When he found he couldn't snap her out of it, and she was no longer a source of revenue to him, he simply decamped.
Hmm. You say Vance is now dead?
We heard the happy news about 6 months ago. Some public benefactor had shot him. I've always meant to look that fellow up.
From that very day, she began to get better. From the moment she heard the news, it was as though a spell had been lifted.
Hmm. Now she's practically all well.
You know, it's odd at that, someone phoning for him after all these months.
Probably the sheriff just catching up.
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Damon, you don't suppose...
I'll go. It may be a peasant with a petition.
Good evening.
My dear Martha, you are positively psychic. The Honorable Stanley Vance.
Thank you. I trust the shock will not be too great.
One knoweth not the place nor the hour when the bridegroom cometh, does one?
My luggage will be here shortly.
Listen to me, Stanley Vance.
Good evening, Martha. I regret to arrive so unceremoniously. I have been ill.
So we have been told. We have been assured, however, that your illness was fatal.
Damon, I thought I... Stanley.
Jessica, my poor, poor darling.
Stanley.
Oh, but you're ill, my dear, aren't you? You're ill. You should be resting. You're tired and exhausted, aren't you? Terribly, terribly tired.
Yes, I am tired.
Oh, great.
Terribly tired.
I'll take you up to your room, darling. I take it we still have the same room, Martha.
Listen to me, Stanley Vance.
The poor girl, you can see how weak she...
If you think you're going to stay under this roof for a single minute, get out!
Very well.
Get out!
Very well, if you insist on being inhospitable, Martha. You'll pack your things, Jessica. We'll go to an hotel.
Yes. Yes, Stanley.
Jessica.
But I'm so tired. Will you help me, Stanley?
Of course I will, my dear. Come along.
Stanley...
Yes, Martha?
All right, Stanley. You win.
You're asking us to avail ourselves of your hospitality, Martha?
Yes. You can stay.
That's very sweet of you, Martha. Isn't it, darling?
Yes. Yes, Stanley.
But somehow, someday, there'll be a time of reckoning for you, Stanley Vance. And until it comes... Keep out of my sight.
The pleasure will be all mine. Come, darling. We'll go to our room now.
Yes, Stanley.
Damon.
Yes, my aged auntie.
Damon, what are we going to do?
I don't know what you're going to do, ducky. But I'm going down to the Lambs Club and have a quadruple scotch and soda.
You
it heartless of me, but during the next few days, I simply stayed away. I think you'll understand my reasons later. As for Jessica, she was, of course, completely in his power again, and about a week later, there appeared upon the scene a gentleman who was destined to play a very substantial role in our little drama. I think you've already met him, at least on one occasion.
I'll get it, Jessica, darling. Hello? No, Mr. Damon Wellington isn't here. Can I take a message, please? Mr. Max Hartsfeld. Hartsfeld. I'll tell him you called, Mr. Hartsfeld. I really couldn't say. And you can come up and wait if you like, of course, but I can't promise he'll see you. Very well, goodbye. Jessica?
Yes, Stanley?
Do you know any friend of Damon's named Max Hartsfeld?
No, Stanley.
He seemed extremely eager to see him. He said he'd come up here and wait.
Oh, I see.
That's no matter. Tell me, darling, have you been feeling a little stronger these last few days?
Yes. I think perhaps I am, Stanley.
But of course you're not ready to go back on the stage again, are you, darling?
No. Of course not, Stanley.
Poor darling.
No more love, no more. Well, my little lovebirds, how are you two? How are you, Jessica?
A little stronger, I think. Am I a little stronger, Stanley?
Of course you are, my dear. Jessica, I think you'd better leave us now. There's something I want to talk over with Damon.
Yes, Stanley.
I'll see you again very shortly, darling.
Yes, Stanley.
Well, Damon, I've been wanting to talk to you for some time.
Really? I wish I could say the same.
I suppose you realize, Damon, that it's out of the question for Jessica to go on in the play in her present condition.
That's kind of the point, William Vance. I have a pressing engagement with a pin-up girl, and I have got to change into my zoot suit.
No, seriously, Damon, I know that you somehow connect me with Jessica's condition.
By an odd coincidence, I do. What of it?
I know it would make you and everyone very happy if Jessica could go on in the play.
The light at last illuminates my addled wits, so it's a shakedown. A shakedown, is it, Stanley?
My dear Damon, I really don't know what you're talking
about. Look here, my larcenous in-law. I've been shaken down by experts on every conceivable count, including the Mann Act in my time, and I can smell them a mile away. What you propose is that for certain financial considerations, you will leave this happy home, Jessica will recover, and she can go on in the play. The answer is no.
There won't be any play without her, Damon.
Are you suggesting that my name is not sufficient to draw the suckers? I can get a dozen people to play Jessica's part. Margaret O'Brien, Marjorie Maine, Daisy, Agnes Moorhead. Makes no difference to me. Anybody at all.
Don't try to bluff me, Damon. After all this build-up, you won't dare go on without Jessica.
You little know me, Stinky. You may consider your little farce as having closed on opening night. As for Jessica, I'm very much afraid that she's made her bed, and now she'll have to lie in it. There's no cure for her short of murder with yourself as victim, and I do not propose to put my neck in the hangman's noose. Good night.
I think you'll see things my way a little later, Damon.
Did. By the way, did I have any calls?
Oh, yes. Max Hartsfeld called. Said he was coming up here to wait for you.
Good heavens, when?
He's on his way now, I imagine.
Look, tell him I'm out. Will you go into Hollywood or something? The fellow's been pestering me all week. Wants to buy into the show, and I simply don't want to see him.
Well, he wants to buy into the show.
Yes, he does not share your lamentable lack of faith in my talent, Stanley, and he's dying to buy into the show.
Does he know Jessica won't be able to appear?
Of course he does, you idiot. Everybody does. Don't you read the trade papers? And now, good night, repulsive. I have other fish to fry. Toodaloo, flat top.
Jessica. Oh, Jessica, my dear.
I'm coming, Stan.
Tell me, Jessica, the Dark Tower, the play you were going to appear in with Damon, you have an interest in it, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I think I do.
An equal interest with Damon?
With Damon, yes.
How much do you suppose that interest is worth, Jessica?
$100,000, I think.
$100,000, huh?
Yes, that was it.
Have you thought about what you're going to do with it now that you can't appear in the play yourself?
No, Stanley, I haven't.
You see, I'm not at all sure the play will be a success without you, Jessica.
I don't know, Stanley.
And so it might be wise to sell your share of it before it opens. Don't you agree, Jessica?
Yes. Yes, I do agree.
And, Jessica, if I could find a buyer, and I think perhaps I can, it might be best if I were to handle the details for you. Don't you think?
Yes, Stanley. You handle it.
The fact of the matter is, there's a man coming up here this evening, a friend of Damon's, Max Hartsfeld. Do you remember I asked you about him?
Yes.
It won't be any trouble to you, darling. All you'll have to do is sign the necessary papers.
Excuse me. Is this the residence of Mr. Damon Wellington?
Mr. Hartsfeld?
Yes.
Oh, come in, please.
Mr. Wellington is at home?
No, and we don't expect him, but he's discussed with me the reason for your visit, and I think perhaps you and I can reach a satisfactory agreement.
And you are...
Stanley Vance. I'm Miss Wellington's husband. This is my wife.
How do you do?
I'm very glad.
Sit down, please, Mr. Hartsfield. May I have your hat and coat?
Thank you.
And your gloves, please.
I'm sorry. It's eccentricity, perhaps. I always keep them on.
Oh. Now, Mr. Hartsfield, Damon tells me that you wish to buy an interest in the new Wellington play, The Dark Tower.
Yes, I've been seeking an interview with Mr. Wellington.
Yes, so he's told me. However, Damon has very definitely made up his mind not to sell any part of his interest in the play.
You are sure of this, Mr. Vance?
Oh, yes, quite sure. I had a long talk with him about it only this evening.
I see. I will not conceal from you that this is a source of great disappointment to me, Mr. Vance. I have such a deep admiration for the talents of Mr. Wellington. I've ventured in a few previous theatrical enterprises. Now, at last, I hope...
I quite understand your feelings, Mr. Hartsfeld, and I think that I may be able to help you.
Yes?
Yes. You see, Damon owns only half of the Wellington interest in the play. My wife, Miss Jessica Wellington, owns the other half. And she... we, if the offer were sufficiently attractive...
Indeed. You are willing to sell then, Miss Wellington?
Yes. Whatever Stanley says.
Good. Then perhaps we should get down to detail, huh?
Yes, Mr. Vance. And Miss Wellington, I'm afraid you will think me very rude.
Not at all. What is it?
Since the talents of Miss Wellington's brother must be considered the very essence of our bargaining, and since you are acting as her agent in any event, I wonder if she'd forgive me if I asked that you and I conclude this part of our business alone, Mr. Vance.
Oh, of course. Jessica will understand perfectly. Won't you, my dear?
Yes, Stanley.
Run along then, darling. I'll call you when we need you.
Yes, Stanley.
Now, Mr. Vance, I imagine you will wish to know a little more about the man with whom you are dealing. Here's my card. I'm staying at the Waldorf. I've written the room number on the card for you.
Well, there's no need, really.
Yes. But before we discuss terms, there is one other thing.
Yeah?
I wonder... you do not know me, do you, Mr. Vance?
Know you?
You do not know why I've been looking forward with such pleasure to an interview with you. Alone.
I know,
It's very simple, really, Mr. Vance. It's just that I'm going to kill you.
To kill me? Really, Mr. Hartsfield?
With these two hands. And before you die, I want you to know the reason. Jessica.
No.
So you see, Ben, there is your murderer, Mr. Max Hartsfeld. And I hope you're duly grateful to him. An elusive fellow, Hartsfeld. The police have been trying to find him for 2 weeks. They never will.
Left no fingerprints, you see. He always kept his gloves on. It's an eccentricity.
Wait a minute. Do you mean you?
My dear Mutton.
My dear Muttonhead. Listen, darling, the whole thing's perfectly clear. It's as plain as the putty nose on Max Hartsfield's face.
I still can't get it into my head.
Benjamin, if you don't know who Max Hartsfield is by now, you are the only person within the sound of my voice who does not.
You mean you impersonated... Then it wasn't Jessica.
Jessica? She never could have done it. The girl has talent, but no genius.
But Damon, murder.
Murder, he says. Dear friend, you share with me a guilty secret. Your lips are sealed. Come. In the words of Hamlet, never, so help you mercy. Note that you know aught of me. Swear by my sword.
What?
Swear!
I swear?
Well said, old mole. Well, I think that winds up the case, Watson. Jessica will receive by registered post a signed confession by Max Hartsfield, bound in vellum. That should end her worries. You may consider it as my wedding present. It will be a work not without literary merit, although written lefty. I should prefer it to be published posthumously. I look forward to a long and brilliant career in the theater. I should not care to terminate it abruptly upon so paltry a characterization as the late Max Hartsfield. Music. Curtain.
And so closes The Dark Tower by Alexander Wolcott and George S. Kaufman. And starring Orson Welles, tonight's tale of suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear.
If we could bring to this microphone a man typical of all Roma wine dealers, this is what he might tell you.
I sell a lot of the good Roma wines. They are, you know, America's largest selling wines. My Roma wine customers, I've noticed, are sociable people who enjoy entertaining friends. Talking with me, they give a lot of credit for the success of their entertaining to the enjoyable Roma wines they serve. They're thrifty people, too, these buyers of Roma wines. What else could offer so much enjoyment for so little cost? Only pennies a glass by actual check.
Now, that doesn't leave much for me to add, except this, perhaps. If you are not already one of the millions enjoying Roma wines regularly, make your own taste test of any of Roma wine's many different taste-delighting California wine types, such as the delicious tangy Roma Sherry, or the hearty Roma Burgundy, or the sweeter, heavier Roma Port, and discover for yourself why Roma wines are winning international praise voiced in this phrase, Roma wines are truly magnificent. Let me repeat the name, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Orson Welles, ladies and gentlemen. Next week's suspense will, as is its policy from time to time, do the unexpected in the way of casting. Because you're going to hear the country's leading comic juvenile, Mr. Eddie Bracken, as a dramatic actor. I look forward to hearing that. I know you do, too.
Insure your baby's future by insuring your country's future. Buy war bonds for your baby today.
Don't forget then, next Thursday, same time, you will hear Eddie Bracken in Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
Your cell phone already has an FM receiver chip installed in it, but major Canadian telecommunication and mobile companies have blocked access to this free system to listen to the radio in favor of charging for data streaming. With access to the FM chip, your phone can still receive broadcasts and updates during an emergency, even if the cell towers are down. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
This is Nightline, your open door to people and places, and this is Walter O'Keefe. Nightline invites you to listen in on NBC's award-winning science fiction series, X-1. Now escape to a world of the future.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, Silana by James E. Gunn. But first, hear this. Now, X-1. Our story, Silana by James E. Gunn.
My name is Norman Blake, statistician, first class. At 2:30 p.m. on Monday, October 21st, in the year 2055, I became a deviant. I left my job an hour early. To deviate from the norm was unheard of in a perfectly adjusted society such as ours. Thanks to the great psychologist Kinder, we had a society where everybody's job suited his talents and needs, where children were raised scientifically, and where everyone lived happily on an even keel instead of swinging back and forth from gloom to ecstasy. Then I noticed it, the single flaw in the perfect system.
Come in. Yes, Norm.
Henry, I'd like to talk to you for a moment, privately.
Close the door. It's rather unusual for me to see one of my statisticians privately, but since we're old friends...
Something rather serious has come up.
Oh?
As you know, my duty is to check the computers to make certain there are no deviations.
Yes?
This morning, I ran over the figures for our district. Here is the sheet. The deviation is near the bottom.
1,037 gallons of water purified, 1,037 gallons consumed, 9,328 births, 9,328 deaths. I see nothing wrong so far.
Read the next item.
One candy bar taken from baby. Well?
But don't you see? A baby can't consent. Therefore, it must have been taken without consent. Henry, that is theft. We haven't had a case of theft in this society for almost 29 years.
I see.
It's got me so upset, I can't think of anything else.
You're a little edgy, aren't you?
Well, wouldn't you be if you knew there was an antisocial being walking the streets of your own city?
I don't think I'd quite go to pieces like that. Maybe, this is just a suggestion. Maybe you ought to see an analyst. Perhaps it would help you deal with this problem.
I've been analyzed.
How long ago?
8 years.
Well, unless you're prepared to handle this problem, I'd advise you to get some help. Meanwhile, take the rest of the afternoon off.
Off? Deviate from the schedule?
As director, and as an old friend of yours, I order it. I consider you to be in extreme upset.
That's your order?
That's my order.
I must confess that as I went toward the elevator, a line kept running through my head. Norm has departed from the norm. I was doing something unorthodox, and what frightened me was that it amused me. Here I was, leaving work 1 hour early. I was so preoccupied that I stepped into the elevator without noticing that someone was already in it. An invasion of privacy almost unforgivable. He was a small, strange-looking man with short silver hair and thick, round glasses. Oops, I beg your pardon. I didn't really know you were...
Perfectly all right, stranger.
I'll just step out and...
Hold it, brother. You've got troubles, I can see.
Well, I...
My advice to you is see an analyst. Don't wait another 24 hours.
Thank you for the advice.
That's more than advice, brother. It's a commercial. Here's my card. Andrew C. Rednick, public analyst.
Oh, you're an analyst.
Freelance.
I didn't know there were any.
I'm probably one of the few still practicing. My slogan is, don't kid with your id. If life ain't dandy, come see Andy.
I may be up to see you.
You will, I can tell.
I put on my public face, the mask we wear on the street, and rode home in the proper manner, my arms and hands folded. When I got home, my wife, Nada, was in her room. I signaled on the intercom in case she was, entertaining. She wasn't. She never did. Sometimes I wondered if Nada was quite normal and well-adjusted. Hello, darling.
Is something wrong? Why are you home so early?
I just uncovered a crime wave.
A what?
A crime wave. A theft. Candy. From a baby.
Well, is that serious?
It threatens the entire structure of our society. We have a delicately balanced mechanism here. We're not ready for crime. We don't even know how to catch a criminal.
Well, isn't there an old saying, it takes a thief to catch a thief?
It takes a... Darling, that's it. That's the answer to our problem.
What is?
In order to protect society, I've got to catch the thief. And the only way to do it, obviously, is to become one myself.
You're listening to Solana, tonight's attraction on X-1. Back to X-1 and Solana.
The address on the card was a deserted skyscraper, a pre-analytic building. The elevators were out of order, and I had to climb 29 flights of stairs. Only I was in front of a door that read, Andrew C. Rednick, public analyst. Grin and come in. Mr. Rednick?
It ain't Santa Claus, brother.
Who?
You wouldn't remember. Park your ego. Now, boy, what's your problem?
I've got to do something, and it isn't in my psychological profile.
That's the trouble with this society. Nobody's capable of handling the unexpected.
Are you saying there's an advantage to being unadjusted?
Don't second-guess the analyst, boy. If you mean by advantage, will you be happier? No. But if you mean power, then you've got it. In a country of normal people, the neurotic man is king. You want to be king, boy?
Of course not. I'm perfectly happy and well-adjusted, except for one little problem.
Namely?
I've got to catch a thief.
So?
So I've got to know how a thief thinks and feels, what he does, where he goes.
You mean you want to become neurotic?
Exactly.
This is a rather unorthodox request.
I suppose it is.
I could lose my license if anyone found out.
If you don't do it, it could mean the end of society and civilization.
As bad as that, eh? Very well.
Start at once?
Why not? Sit at my desk. while I lie down on the couch and tell you about my childhood.
You lie down? I'm the one that's supposed to lie down.
You forget this is reverse analysis. I'm supposed to make you neurotic, frustrated. Now then, the first thing I remember was an argument between my father and mother.
You were living with your own father and mother? Ooh, how unhygienic. What a nasty situation.
You aren't very good at this sort of thing, are you, boy? You're supposed to listen, not comment. Now then, when I was 27, I perfected analysis and revolutionized society.
What are you talking about? Kinder perfected analysis and revolutionized society. He died.
Don't second-guess the analyst.
You know, I'm beginning to dislike you already.
Fine. We're making progress already. You're beginning to experience dislike. Next, we'll achieve hatred and then loathing. In 3 weeks, you'll be well on the road to becoming a crook.
Every day for the next week, Rednick lay comfortably on his red leather couch, rambling about his childhood and his problems, while I longed to tell him about my own. I grew more and more repressed, and my disposition became worse and worse. On the eighth day, something happened at the office that made me realize I had to hurry.
Come in.
Henry, it's happened.
What?
The thief has struck again, but this time it's even more serious.
What did he take?
$1 million is missing from the First District Bank.
Great Scott!
We've got to find this thief, Henry. We're doomed if we don't.
Well, maybe he's worked out his repressions. After all, what can a man steal after he's stolen $1 million?
I don't know, but I intend to find out.
Maybe you ought to drop it, Norm.
How can you say a thing like that? It's positively antisocial.
Calm down now. You're all upset again. Why don't you take the day off and go home? Spend some time with that lovely wife of yours. She misses you.
How do you know?
Norm boy, do I detect a note of jealousy? You'd better watch your step. Jealousy is the forerunner of violence. Are you seeing an analyst, as I suggested?
Yes, I am.
Well, keep at it, boy. You're in bad shape.
I kept at it. By the time the annual status examinations were due, I was a complete wreck. I hated Andrew Rednick with a passion. I was ambitious and jealous. I had even sunk to that basest of all passions. I had fallen in love with my own wife. And still, I had not been able to ferret out the thief. He had not struck again.
Ah, you're early, son.
So I'm early.
You'll have to wait. I have another patient.
What?
You'll have to wait. I have another patient in the other room. He'll be leaving in a minute. Just sit down.
Another patient. I could have killed him. Never occurred to me that Andrew C. Rednick would have another patient. After a few moments, a man emerged from the inner office. He was wearing a silver mask or public face, and naturally I couldn't see his features. As I had my own mask on, he didn't see my features either. But I sensed a certain hostility as he brushed by me.
Come in, son.
Who is he?
Take it easy. We don't reveal the names or identities of patients.
I hate him.
You're jealous.
Jealous. As a matter of fact, I've been thinking of quitting the analysis.
Good. This is your last session anyway.
My last session? But it can't be. The annual examinations are coming up tomorrow. I am not ready. I'll be demoted to a menial job.
I doubt it.
I told you I'm not ready. What can I do?
Have you ever thought of cheating?
On the examination? That's horrible. Only a monster could suggest such a thing. What kind of man are you? Who are you, Rednick?
Let me close the door. Now, look through the glass at my sign. You can read it backwards with the door closed.
Andrew Rednick. Rednick backwards. Kinder? You? It's impossible. He's the founder of our whole society. Besides, he's dead. He died in an accident.
All staged. I just decided to duck out.
Why?
Because, my friend, I found I had created a Frankenstein, a perfect society. It was like paradise, a Garden of Eden. The same silly people, happy, not wanting anything, not going anyplace, and not changing. So I decided to create a little sin and thereby give the creatures change, growth, misery, ecstasy, and free will. In a sense, I made them creative. Well, son, au revoir.
But am I really finished?
You're just beginning. Your frustrations are like rabbits, boy. They just keep breeding. I'm the one who's finished.
He clapped his hat on his head and walked out, leaving me alone in his office. When I walked over to his desk, I found a gun lying on top of it. I put it in my pocket and returned to my office. The next 5 hours were spent in statistically predicting the questions I would be asked on the annual examination and in finding out the answers in advance. Then I went home.
Darling, how did it go?
Nada, take a good look at your husband. See anything different?
Well, I've been noticing a change for the past few weeks.
You're going to notice a much bigger change, sweetheart. Tomorrow, the new appointments will be made based on the results of the annual examination.
Did you do well?
Did I do well? Read this card.
The enclosed card has a magnetic reproduction of your new psychological profile. It indicates you are in the 99th percentile of leadership with the second highest altruism rating ever scored. Therefore, a new position has been created for you. Beginning tomorrow, you will be deputy mayor of the district. Deputy, darling, it's wonderful.
Yes, I dare say it is. Only one thing troubles me.
What's that?
I can't understand how anybody scored higher than I did. I'd counted on becoming mayor.
The following day, I reported to the office of the new mayor of our district, the only person who had scored higher than I on the annual examination. I was ushered in promptly. The new mayor was seated behind a huge desk. He wore his public face mask. Mr. Mayor, I'm Norman Blake, the new deputy.
Yes, we've met, you know.
Oh, I'm afraid
I let me remove my public face. There.
Henry. Henry Foreman.
I'm amazed you didn't guess sooner.
How?
Quite simple. You and I, dear fellow, have unstable patterns. With me, the first break came the day I took that bar of candy from the baby as I was passing the nursery. My own act frightened me so that I sought an analyst. The same analyst you sought.
Rednick?
Rednick, Kinder, it's all the same.
And you were the thief and I never...
It takes one to know one, Norm.
You cheated on the exam, too.
Using the computer, just as you did.
Are there any others like us?
I don't know. We'll find out, though. We're ambitious, you and I. That means we'd be moving up, heading for the governorship, perhaps even the presidency. And then we'll collide with the others, if there are any. As Rednick said, in a world of normal people, the neurotic is king.
The only trouble with that is, there can only be one king.
That's right. And only one mayor.
The look he gave me then sent chills up and down my spine. In spite of my high position, I haven't had a moment's peace or relaxation since. Neither, I suspect, has Henry Foreman. There were imbalances in our world which had to lead to the destruction of one or all of us, and we knew it. There was one saying that Rednick Kinder had forgotten to tack up on his wall. Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown.
Fred Collins again. And I'll have another word for you about X-1 in a moment. The attention of the nation is focused on Los Angeles and New York, the cities where two long-awaited world championship boxing matches will take place. The ears of the nation will be tuned to Cavalcade of Sports on NBC Radio, the only network that will bring you both these championship bouts. Friday night, Archie Moore versus Tony Anthony for the light heavyweight crown. Monday night, Sugar Ray Robinson versus Carmen Basilio for the world's middleweight title. And you'll hear them both direct from ringside only on Cavalcade of Sports on NBC Radio. Yes, Friday night, light heavyweight champ Archie Moore pits his skill and experience against the youth and stamina of Tony Anthony. Monday night, Sugar Ray Robinson, one of the greatest boxers in history, defends his middleweight crown against Carmen Basilio. Two great championship fights, Friday night. Moore versus Anthony, Monday night, Robinson versus Basilio. both brought to you direct from ringside on Cavalcade of Sports, exclusively on these same NBC radio stations. You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Morning After by Robert Sheckley. What was Pearson doing here? Would he live or die? For the answers to these and other questions, he had to keep tuning in on a hangover. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. X-1 has brought you Solana, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by James E. Gunn and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in our cast were Walter Black as Norman Blake, David Ross as Andrew C. Rednig, Adele Ronson as Nada, and Guy Repp as Foreman. This is Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by George Voutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production.
There's excitement in the air at night, and Nightline brings it to you. Hear Nightline with Walter O'Keefe next on most of these NBC stations.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
The world's most shocking monster.
That techno rock you guys listen to is godless.
I'm sure.
And the only reason you don't understand our music is that you don't like it.
After I'm gone, your Earth will be free to live out its miserable span of existence.
Can anyone stop their mechanical mail?
All of my most sensitive areas were inflamed. My extremities pulsating with tingling sensation.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Swaying back and forth. A beautiful thing taking me away.
You are a robot.
You must listen to Synaptic Sandwich. Saturday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on CITR FM 101.9.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you for joining us for a Halloween edition of Skulls Hall. See you next.